Well, our Missions Month continues today, focused on our Christian mission to immigrants. So during the last 2 years, four from our congregation's community have participated in the Covenant's Immigration Immersion Border Trip. Linda Hahn, Chris Marshall, Carolyn McCready, and Mimi Fonseca. And we're privileged to be joined today by, and we welcome, Lisa Lively Brooks from the Alliance, the Interfaith Alliance with Migrants of Lane County. So to start, some basic terms. That's fine. Migrant. A migrant is one who moves to a new home or a new region or a new country. Asylum describes one seeking a safe haven or shelter in a new home, really throwing themselves at the mercy of the new country to give them residency. A refugee is one given shelter from oppression or danger, and that's arranged in advance of their arrival for the refugee. So we'll be discussing these more as the panel progresses. And an immigrant is one who comes into a country. So let's start by hearing, these words from Genesis 12. The Lord had said to Abram, "Go from your country, your people, and your father's household to the land I will show you. I'll make you into a great nation, and I will bless you. I'll make your name great, and you'll be a blessing. I will bless those who bless you, and whoever curses you, I will curse. And all the peoples on earth will be blessed through you." So Abram went, as the Lord had told him, and Lot went with him. Abram was 75 years old when he set out from Haran. He took his wife Sarai, his nephew Lot, all the possessions they'd accumulated and the people they'd acquired in Haran, and they set out for the land of Canaan. And they arrived there. Abram traveled throughout the land as far as the site of the great tree of Moreh at Shechem. At that time, the Canaanites were in the land. The Lord appeared to Abram and said, "To your offspring I will give this land." So he built an altar there to the Lord, who had appeared to him. From there he went on toward the hills east of Bethel and pitched his tent with Bethel on the west and Ai on the east. There he built an altar to the Lord and called on the name of the Lord. Then Abram set out and continued toward the Negev. Now there was a famine in the land, and Abram went down to Egypt to live there for a while because the famine was severe. So we're going to ask Linda to kick us off with a summary of the Bible stories of migration.
Well, as Stan mentioned, Chris and I went to the border to see it for ourselves in December of 2023. As our trip ended, our group was encouraged not to just go back to normal life, but to keep talking about what we had seen and learned. So when Chris and I were invited to teach our middle school and our high school Sunday school adult class, we thought it was a good place to begin. But when we looked for faith-based curriculum on immigration, we couldn't find one, so we created our own. As we studied, one thing became clear. Migration is a recurring theme all throughout Scripture. God was always moving people, not randomly, but as part of his bigger plan. Sometimes people moved for safety, sometimes for survival, sometimes because it was the only way to step into what God was doing next. And just like today, some were afraid, some were relieved, some were hesitant, but most of them didn't realize how important their story was in the larger story God was writing. We started at the beginning with Adam and Eve leaving the garden, and then Abraham and Sarah, leaving their home for a land God would show them. They were confused and hesitant, but they trusted and obeyed. Even when famine forced them to move again, God reminded them of his promise to protect them. Then there was Moses, who fled from Egypt to Midian to save his life, only to be sent back to confront Pharaoh and lead his people to freedom. The Israelites then spent 40 years on the move, living as nomads before entering the promised land. We looked at Ruth and Naomi, who moved because of famine and loss. Their story looked like one of desperation, but it became a story of redemption. Ruth, an immigrant and an outsider, ended up being woven into the very lineage of Jesus. We talked about David running from Saul and Elijah being sent to a widow living in another country during famine, and Daniel being taken into exile as a child, yet used by God to inspire his people in a foreign land. Over and over again, people were displaced, unsettled, and moved, and yet God was at work in it all. And then we can't come to Mary and Joseph, traveling to Bethlehem for the census, and later fleeing Egypt to save, fleeing to Egypt to save their child's life. Their obedience and displacement were part of fulfilling God's promise of salvation through Jesus. When you step back and look at all of these stories together, you begin to see that movement, migration, was part of the pathway leading to Jesus, God's answer to the problem of sin. And the story is still unfolding today. One day, Scripture says, God will bring us all home, a home filled with people from every tribe and every nation. What really stood out to us is that in all of these familiar stories, God is not only moving his people, but he's also teaching his people how to respond with empathy, with compassion, with a reminder not to forget those who are strangers and displaced. Their story is our story, and our role is not over. We are still invited to participate as we watch and wait for that final home he is preparing for us.
Well, thanks, Linda. Let's move on to Chris to reflect on Bible teachings and on how to treat immigrants.
As we looked at biblical stories of how God moved people from place to place for various reasons to bring about his story of redemption, we also looked at many of the 92 verses in both Old and New Testaments where God gives guidance and instruction on how to interact with immigrants or aliens, foreigners, strangers, sojourners, depending on your translation. Early in the scriptures, God reminds the Israelites that they were once strangers in a foreign land, and he instructs them to welcome immigrants and treat them as if they were their own. Leviticus 19:33-34, God gives instruction to Moses for his people. When a foreigner resides among you in your land, do not mistreat them. The foreigner residing among you must be treated as your native born. Love them as yourself, for you were foreigners in Egypt. I am the Lord your God. In other verses, God commands his people to give immigrants the same legal protections as the Israelites themselves and to take special care for them because they are more vulnerable. Exodus 12:49 says, "The same law applies both to the native-born and to the foreigner residing among you." Deuteronomy 10:18, and echoed again in Psalm 146:9, says, "He defends the cause of the fatherless and the widow and loves the foreigner residing among you, giving them food and clothing." Old Testament references are many and consistently express God's care for immigrants and vulnerable people. New Testament references aren't as plentiful, but they are also consistent in expressing God's concern and care for immigrants. Hebrews 13:2 instructs believers not to forget to show hospitality to strangers, for by doing so, some people have shown hospitality to angels without knowing it. As we just heard in our gospel reading, Jesus told his disciples that when they took care of strangers and those in need, they were caring for him. And conversely, when they didn't care for them, they were refusing to care for Jesus. Verses in Matthew 25, as we heard, verses 35 and 36, it reads, "For I was hungry, and you gave me something to eat. I was thirsty, and you gave me something to drink. I was a stranger, and you invited me in. I needed clothes, and you clothed me. I was sick, and you looked after me. I was in prison, and you came to visit me." And in verse 40 it says, "Truly I tell you, whatever you did for one of the least of these brothers and sisters of mine, you did for me." Throughout the scriptures, God reveals his heart for the foreigner. As the authors of the book we'll be reading together this fall concludes, God does not suggest we welcome immigrants. He commands it. Not once or twice, but over and over again. And if you haven't already gotten one, you can pick up a bookmark at the back table to review other verses of God's that express God's heart for immigrants. The table is in the narthex with the books we'll be reading together.
So, Chris, what about Romans 13 and obeying the law? Doesn't that apply here?
Well, the original intent for Romans 13, verses 1 to 7, was to tell the believers to pay their taxes. If we look at Romans 13 in the context of Romans 12, and in the verses we heard today, the rest of Romans, we see that the call to obey those in authority is not a call to blind obedience, but actually a call to a lifestyle of hating evil, practicing good, showing hospitality to strangers, loving enemies and overcoming evil with good. And the passage actually does support Christian opposition to many laws and practices that are not in accordance with the lifestyle of loving our neighbors as God loves us. Paul's letter to the Romans was actually written from prison because he didn't obey the governing authorities in preaching Jesus.
Okay. Thanks. Well, in June, Carolyn and Mimi did the immigration immersion border trip, and we've asked them to share a few observations and lessons learned from their trip. Carolyn, you going to start off?
Sure. There's a first slide here. We took what they call a pilgrimage, and it was an amazing trip. A lot of you have asked me about the trip and what did we learn, what was it like. It would take me hours to tell you all of what we experienced and learned, but I'm going to try to give you a 5-minute overview. So think of it as a little snapshot of what our trip was. Linda has kept reminding me that it's about proximity, that it changes everything for you when you're with or in a situation. So I'm hoping that this might help you a little bit to feel that you had a bit of that proximity that we got to experience. This is run through the, go back one slide, thanks Kim, run through the Covenant Church, who also partnered with a group called Journey Home. They do amazing work. John Huckins runs it, and he's that middle photo there. And Dominique Gilliard works for the Covenant Church. And so those two were our main leaders and teachers and did incredible work for us. So next slide. We had almost 3 days. The first day was spent with this amazing woman, professor at Fuller University, Alexia Salvatierra. Amazing. She spent over 40 years working on issues of immigration, migration, biblical study, and she challenged us. She taught us. She helped answer questions. All of this group brought their own questions to the table here, and we were at very different places as we started this discussion. Some people were in leadership in their churches. Some were lay people. Some weren't sure what they thought about immigration, and she was such an amazing resource. She's passionate about her faith, and it really set the foundation for what our next 2 days would be like. So a lot of learning, a lot of teaching. I'm excited to read the book again, Welcoming the Stranger, because that was part of our training before we went. Next slide, thanks. So our first full day there, we spent all day on the San Diego side of the border. and we were doing San Diego, Tijuana, journey. And we started at the border with the pastor of Border Church. That's the top left picture there. He's been the pastor of this church since 2011. I think the church has been going longer than that. The initial goal was a chance to worship for people who were separated by the wall, and they would be able to be on each side of the wall, but together. So believers, families, friends who could worship God and see each other, sometimes even pass things between the notes or scripture to each other. So amazingly powerful. Since then, things have changed. There's now a second wall on the U.S. side that is 100 yards in onto the U.S. side, so there's no possibility of people seeing each other or touching. So that has changed, but this church still exists. They meet at the same time, and they digitally and virtually they're able to connect, even though they can't see each other. So that was amazing. This pastor knows a lot. He's been at the border for many years. He knows about the border patrols and the ICE agents and really taught us a lot. It was very interesting. We prayed there. That was powerful. Next thing we went on to do is the bottom photo there. Stay on the same slide, I'm sorry. Is that one of the detention centers, a massive building. I've never seen a larger building. We heard about that. This really touched me. I didn't really realize a lot about prisons for profit, but that is what this detention center is, and as many, many are in our country. Oregon does not allow prisons for profit, so we do not have any, but many other states do. It was especially poignant to be here because John, our leader's, his daughter's best friend's dad had just been detained and was in this prison. So we prayed for him. We prayed for others who were there, as well as the people who work in this system. Of course, in a prison for profit, you need to fill every bed every night. That's part of it. You need to make sure you spend as little money as you can, because it's all about how much are you going to make. So that was an interesting thing to learn about. The last thing, the picture on the side there, we met two amazing people. Again, this was about proximity for me, because we spent time with two people who have quite the story. This is Hector. Hector is a veteran. He works over 6 years in the U.S. military, was deported, had a very difficult time. He had grown up in the U.S., was brought over as a child, didn't have connections or any family on the Mexico side, and he struggled. And he ended up alcohol, drug addiction, got help through a faith-based organization, and he started a ministry to veterans who have been deported and are separated from their families and children. So he has been able to come back to the U.S., has amazing stories to tell. We also had spent time with Yolanda. Similar story. She was deported, separated from her family and her children for over 13 years. Talked about what it was to raise your children through Zoom or through letters, phone calls, all of what that would take. She has been able to come back, and she also started a ministry to those who are separated from their families, especially moms, with the DACA kids. Oftentimes the kids could stay, but the parents could not. So she had great encouraging stories, even in the midst of a lot of heartbreak. Next slide, please. Sorry, this is getting long. There's a lot to tell about. On the last day, we walked together across the border, the San Diego Tijuana border. It was an amazing journey. Top right are our two guides, two young women. One lives in San Diego. One is on the Mexico side. They both have spent years and years understanding and learning what the issues are surrounding the border, and people of great faith. So they were very, very helpful as we walked and learned about the issues of Tijuana. Many thousands of people, hundreds of thousands of people there who are also not Mexican. Of course, many are, but people are stuck at the border, have been deported, tried to get into the U.S. and could not. We spent time with a woman who from Haiti who got stuck across the border, obviously not from Mexico, ended up starting a restaurant where we were able to eat and meet her. It was a really beautiful story, but very hard. We walked through the red light district. Again, there's lots of challenges in a city like this that's dealing with a lot of issues. And then probably the most powerful time, I think, for most of us was time at the border church on the Mexico side. So we got to celebrate worship with those the members of that congregation who meet there every Sunday. There is a screen, so you can see those on the U.S. side who are also celebrating. The pastor is wonderful. He's a man of deep faith, full of joy, inspiring in spite of a very, very hard situation. Our group of 19 of us were able to be involved. The picture on the bottom right is one of our team helping serve communion. So it was a moving time. I think it helped us all to realize our shared humanity, our shared faith, and the vision of trying to listen to what God's trying to tell us through this difficult time. Good morning, everybody. I know most of you, but not everybody. So I am Carolyn's sister, and I had the opportunity to join on the Border Pilgrimage in June, but not as a member of a Covenant Church. This is not my church home, but it feels like a second home. I've been visiting with Carolyn and Gary for the last 20-some years, so Covenant and Valley has really felt like a second home to me. But what I'm going to share today is hopefully a bit of encouragement to you as almost an outsider's perspective about the Covenant Church and this issue of immigration. So when Carolyn first mentioned last year that Chris and Linda had gone on this pilgrimage, my first thought was, if that happens again, I want to go. I just felt like this is such an important issue that is complex and confusing, and how do you respond as a believer? And that idea of proximity, of being where people are living this out day by day, felt important. And my second thought was how great that the Covenant denomination is caring about this issue, to invest in something like this for lay people to participate in and learn from. And that just proved to be even more true after this 3-day experience was over. I came away so encouraged. So looking at these slides, the red, white, and blue stripe there, that is Dominique, who led our portion of this. He's part of the Love, Justice, Do Mercy arm of the Covenant Church. Terrific teacher and a heart for issues of justice. And then just some pictures of our team there. And this was a very diverse team of mostly lay people from all across the country, from small towns in Wisconsin and in New Jersey and Chicago, all with this shared vision and desire to learn about this issue and what our responsibility as followers of Jesus looks, what that looks like lived out. So I think I said to Carolyn each day during this, this is what my faith needs right now in these interesting times with everything going on, to see a group of people with that heart and to know that the denomination that you all are part of is sponsoring that and investing in it. There was a cost as an attendee to go, but there was also a significant investment by the church, the denomination itself, of expertise and people in making this happen. So very encouraged by that. And then I'll just say one more quick thing. The other thing that encouraged me was to see people doing justice work and not neglecting Jesus. And I think I've been to so many churches where one or the other happens, but to see both happen, one as a kind of natural flow from kind of following Jesus to do that work was great. So, okay, and then my second and last slide. Just wanted to mention this idea because it really struck me the first day that we started our pilgrimage. The head of the Journey Home Ministry, John Huckins, had this quote where he talks about the idea of part of their mission being to give people tools to help create a world where everybody has a home. And I'd never thought of immigration that way. I know this is a church that cares about homelessness and helping the homeless population in Eugene, but it felt like two very, very separate issues. And I realized, gosh, from a global perspective, maybe from God's perspective almost, this feels like a global homelessness issue. And how do we respond with that same mercy, compassion, and trying to understand how we can help in a practical way? And that final quote there, about 70% of the people who immigrate to the U.S. Are Christians or followers of Christ. And I don't think there's a difference for us in how we help those who are vulnerable or poor, regardless of their faith, but also to know that so many of these folks in such dire situations are our brothers and sisters in Christ. That is so significant. Okay, and there's one more slide. I'm going to let Carolyn talk about this because it follows up with what she was saying.
Really fast version, and we'll talk about it later. But when the churches used to meet across the border and they were able to pass tiny, tiny things through the wires, they would share passing the peace by being able to put their pinky through the wire, just the tiniest little bit. So this church carries that on still, which is very touching, both on the American side and the Mexican side. And at the end of the service, they all pass the peace by the pinky, realizing this border is keeping us away from each other, but nothing will really be able to keep us apart.
Well, thanks. I'm going to say, I believe that when you, Chris, and Linda went, you were able to share communion through the fence, if you will. No. It was doing the same thing. Okay. Well, the passing the peace, forgot to mention to Brian, but we'd like to try that at the conclusion of our service, and so stay tuned. This is Mission Month, though, and just to keep us focused, most of us won't find ourselves at the border to share Jesus' love, but we face the question then, how do we apply that Bible teaching in our lives here today? So we're going to turn now to Lisa Lively-Brooks, again of the Interfaith Alliance with Migrants in Lane County, and we've asked her to share some options for local actions that we might be part of. Lisa?
Thank you. Thanks for having me here today. And I just wanted to echo that I've had the privilege of getting to know Stan and Linda and Chris over a few years, and they helped put on World Refugee Day in cooperation with the all-volunteer refugee resettlement group. And Linda and I have been partnered with a new refugee family from Afghanistan for a year. And Chris has partnered with a family from Central America for a year in a long-term advocate program with the Refugee and Immigrant Service Program. And I also wanted to commend your congregation. I understand that you've opened your church for a Spanish-speaking congregation to use, and that's a wonderful opportunity for both of your congregations. What is the role of faith communities in reimagining resistance? Over the past few decades, the public face of Christianity in the United States has grown less and less recognizable to me. I have continued to quietly go to worship, brushing elbows with people who maintain similar belief in loving God and loving our neighbors as ourselves. I have become convinced that that is not enough. And I'd like for you to pull to your mind, if you could, an image of Sisyphus. Now, if you remember Sisyphus, there's a very steep hill, and there's a gigantic boulder, and then Sisyphus is trying to push that boulder and keep it from rolling over on top of him. So if you have that image in your mind, it helps me to think about our current situation. Think of the image. The boulder represents the oppression, okay? Whether it's the arrest and deportation of migrants, lack of affordable housing, or hunger among children. So that boulder has gotten bigger and bigger in the last decade. And recently, much bigger. And the boulder is often the focus of our attention. And when you look at a boulder that is growing in size, it's really easy to think about being helpless and hopeless. So, and most of us, when we look, we focus on those injustices. Legally promised funding being withheld, the Eugene immigrant mother who got picked up at the ICE by ICE as she dropped her child off at Head Start, a lack of support for the most vulnerable in our country. Sometimes the size of the boulder grabs our attention and we feel hopeless. But the two other parts of the picture I'd like for you to think about. So the person, Sisyphus, represents our own efforts as a community. The person can be strengthened by the community, and their impact can become broader and deeper. Sisyphus represents our community, the beloved, which includes ourselves, our neighbors, the strangers among us, everyone from the most vulnerable to the richest and most powerful. We can push the boulder uphill and work on those issues. For example, by advocating or accompanying migrants to their court hearings, bearing witness to the experiences of those seeking asylum, welcoming and tutoring newcomers and learning English. And then also, there's another part of that picture that we can think about, and that is the steepness of the mountain. Okay, so in the last few years, that mountain has been getting steeper. The boulder has been getting bigger, and we're feeling more helpless. So it represents the systemic biases that make life so difficult for some. Can you imagine how much heavier the boulder is as the steepness goes up, and how much easier it is when it gets leveled? It represents laws, policies, institutions, social agreements that impact us all, but are more devastating to some. We ask ourselves, how level is the playing field? I would suggest that our most immediate and impactful actions will come from focusing on Sisyphus himself. As congregations, we can broaden our circles, doing work to become more inclusive. As individuals, we can look people in the eye, have conversations with strangers, learn a new language, go out of our way to include other cultures and vulnerable groups, and practice kindness. How can we make our faith communities more welcoming, not just in intention, but in practice? Can we take on the little things that don't make the news? Can we join with others and show up at events, speak out, study issues, and take actions on what we learn? Can we advocate for human rights and policy making from the local level to the state and federal level? I'd like to conclude with one of my favorite parables in the Bible, the story of the Good Samaritan. In this story, Jesus speaks of a lawyer and about the right way to live. He speaks of a Jewish priest and a Levite, or a temple attendant, both considered holy people of the time. The other example Jesus gives is of a Samaritan. It's important to know that the Samaritans were religiously and ethnically different from the Jews of Jesus' time. They were considered outcasts, second-class citizens, and generally avoided. So, from the Revised Standard Version, Luke 10:25-37. And behold, a lawyer stood up to put him to the test, saying, "Teacher, what shall I do to inherit eternal life?" He said to them, "What is written in the law? How do you read?" And he answered, "You shall love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, and with all your strength, and with all your mind, and your neighbors as yourself." And he said to them, "You have answered right. Do this, and you shall live." But he, the lawyer, desiring to justify himself, said to Jesus, "And who is my neighbor?" Jesus replied, "A man was going down from Jerusalem to Jericho, and he fell among robbers, who stripped him and beat him and departed, leaving him half dead. Now by chance, a priest was going down that road, and when he saw him, he passed on the other side. So likewise, a Levite, when he came to the place and saw him, passed by on the other side. But a Samaritan, as he journeyed, came to where he was, and when he saw him, he had compassion, and went to him and bound up his wounds, pouring on oil and wine. Then he set him on his own beast and brought him to an inn and took care of him. And the next day he took out 2 denarii and gave them to the innkeeper, saying, 'Take care of him, and whatever you spend, I will repay you when I am back.' Which of these three do you think proved neighbor to the man who fell among the robbers. He said, the one who showed mercy to him. And Jesus said to him, go and do likewise. Thank you.
Lisa, how many refugees or refugee families would you say arrived in Lane County in the year 2024?
In 2024, I think there were 80. In 2025, I think there were 3. Mm-hmm. And there were also 3 who were who had been through the refugee process, which is very long and drawn out. And they were, they had plane tickets to come. Mm-hmm. And they had already sold all their things. They had left their houses. They didn't have anything. And they were left behind. So there's a court proceeding going on now trying to bring the, I think it's, oh, it's a lot of people. When the numbers get big and unbelievable, I have a hard time grabbing hold of them. But it's somewhere between 40,000 and 140,000 people who were in the situation where they were approved and had they had tickets to come.
But if 3 families have arrived this year to date, sort of nobody's arriving right now due to the administration's orders. Are there still needs?
Yes, the people who arrived in January, they were promised money in order to get established here and support for a year. Well, they've gotten support through the Refugee and Immigrant Services Committee, but there's been no flow of money. So it's happening, but so there's a need for funding. There's a need for tutoring. There's a need if anybody knows of any jobs that are available that can be done without perfect English. There's a big need for employment. There's a really big need for friendship. I've been in different countries in my life, and I know how important it is when somebody will reach out to you and treat you as a human being, a fellow human being, and welcome you. So there's that. Because there's not very much monetary support. People who are helping with things like the burrito brigade and some of the food pantries, people are really depending on those a lot, and so that's really helpful. So there are a lot of ways to be helpful.
So you've agreed to do what's called an advocacy pop-up here on October 13th. And we'll publicize that more, but could you briefly talk about what that looks like and why?
Okay. Well, for one thing, the Interfaith Advocacy Group, formed like wildfire at the beginning of this year, and it was because everybody felt the burning need to do something constructive and positive and that wasn't being done before. And so one of the reasons for the pop-ups is to open our churches up to different places and different people so that, we can be in a sanctuary and we can feel all safe, but the impact that can have on the community is limited unless they get the courage to come in. So inviting people into different faith areas is, I think, very important, and people going out of their own faith areas, I think, is very important, too. We need to retake the messages of Jesus' love and the commandments to do the compassionate and loving things. The pop-ups, so for one thing, it's about enlarging our communities by inviting people in and going from place to place. But there will be an opportunity for every month there's going to be a pop-up at a different place, and there will be an opportunity to put a thing called Five Calls on your phone. Does anybody here use Five Calls? Okay. Some people are not comfortable with technology, so we're going to have some technology people here to help you get it on your phone if you don't already know. But it is the way to get a hold of your own representatives and governors, because it's immediate. They tally those numbers when they get the phone calls, and they can get a sense for what's important to the constituency right away. So there will be a little station for that, and at the same time a station for writing postcards. And the emphasis on the postcards, and we hope people will bring someone they have identified as doing something courageous, and so and an address, so that they can tell us something that has been, somebody has done that is good, that is courageous, that is in, that you really want to just shout out about. And people will be invited to write those people to say thank you for taking the courageous way. And doesn't have to be long, and we hope people will make two calls and write two postcards in the first half hour. And then the second half hour will be a presentation 15 minutes long, that and questions afterwards if people want to, but it will be about something that has popped up in the month before the pop-up that needs to be addressed. So it'll be an opportunity to address something. So,
well, great, thank you, and we'll be publicizing or sharing information about that as that date gets closer. But that's a good foretaste. Thank you. Thanks to each of you for your preparation time and just your willingness to grow our picture of our Christian response to immigration and to build our skills. We're going to, in a minute, sing our closing song, The Task Unfinished. But among other things, we're called to welcome the stranger. And in addition to the advocacy pop-up, we're going to do this shared reading in our community, in the congregation, of welcoming the stranger. And in fact, it's a covenant-wide reading this fall of this material. And for that, we're thankful for that and some of the resource materials they've made available. It'll be part of that class to assist in the conversation. So keep that in mind. The books, again, are in the narthex. Chris is going to be out there after service. We're asking $15 a piece. That's our cost for the books. But if that's a hardship, let her know, and we'll figure that one out. The goal is for everyone to have an opportunity to read it. Thanks again. Let's stand as we close the song.